So Dion mentioned that the news can be disturbing sometimes, and I find that when the news is disturbing, I turn to my favorite source of fake news, which is the Weekly World News. Does anybody know what that is? Some of you may be too young to recognize what that is, but you know when you go to the grocery store and there's the tabloids in the stands? I don't think they make it anymore. I think it was discontinued. But I hear a rumor that it's coming back, but that could be fake news, so who knows? But anyway, some of the, if you Google Weekly World News headlines, they're amazing. Some of them that I observed recently was that a coven of witches was convicted and they turned the judge into a guinea pig. This, on a newspaper, in Vaughan's. Another one is that a man from Alabama actually had a banjo growing out of his knee. Required surgical removal. And did you know that the Pope, under his big Pope hat, has a little tiny Pope hiding under there? And who knows if that Pope has a Pope? I'm the Pope's Pope. Wow, that's cosmic, right? I think my favorite one, though, I think, because I used to work in the medical field, was a story about a severed leg that independently on its own power hopped itself to the hospital to be reunited with its body. Can you imagine driving down the 101 and seeing dun 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 dun? Oh, you gotta love it, right? And when I look at stuff like that, it's ridiculous, even though it's in the paper. It's ridiculous. Oh, wait. Okay. It's just ridiculous. But I look at it and I see the vast amount of creativity that we humans have. That's another reason I listen to stand-up comedy all the time in my car on satellite radio. I actually heard a joke the other day that I can tell in church. Much of it is not church-friendly. Do you guys know when the worst time to get a heart attack is? The worst time to get a heart attack is... I'm hearing all kinds of answers that I cannot repeat. Would you like to... Yes! He got the answer. During a game of charades is the worst time to have a heart attack, right? Particularly if you're the one who's it and you're working with really bad guessers. Yeah. I know it's awful. I'm sorry. So there's all of this creativity that we have to make up stuff like that, right? Judges turning into guinea pigs and whatnot. Is it possible that we sometimes use that creativity against ourselves in a destructive manner? In a way that paints a negative picture of reality through our perception that then we have to live with? What if we could change that around? Chances are everybody here is going through something, and chances are you have a headline about it. Some type of a headline. If you can summarize that in just a few words, I'll give you some examples later on, but think about what your headline might be. And then in this time together, we'll work together to bring that headline to meet your heartline, and we'll see what happens. This type of message about headlines, I think, can only be served by me telling a humiliating story about myself. I told my foundations class the details the other night, so if you want to know the details, I'm not going to tell the details here. They're all like really sweet and voyeuristic and whatnot, so they like to hear when I fail. This is such a sweet foundations class. I'm serious. They are so nice. It's so much fun. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. So I want to tell you about a huge mistake that I made. Big mistake. Except I'm not going to tell you what it is. Let's just say that I made a mistake, and I got chastised for it in public by someone that I admire, a colleague, and I felt really, really badly. Felt so badly. You can imagine that I had some headlines for myself, right? Minister is humiliated. Approval rating plunges. And then there's the other kind of headline, which is, I'm right and they're wrong. Right? Those headlines sometimes do not serve us. They feel like they're helping, but if we can step back and get into a more observational place, then perhaps we can do something else with our minds, use some of that creativity for good. Since I would say 75% of my spiritual practice is forgiveness, I started doing the Ho'oponopono prayer around this incident. The Ho'oponopono prayer is, I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. I thank you. I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. I thank you. Want to do it after me? I love you. I thank you. Please forgive me. I'm sorry. So I did that prayer a lot of times about this incident. By the way, this incident, really basically all I did was, I don't want you to think like I, pillaged Nordstrom's rack or something and got caught or backed into my neighbor's car. I did that, oops. But I told him. I just said something that I shouldn't have said and I got in trouble for it. Like that doesn't happen every Sunday, right? I know. So when we do something like that, like a designated spiritual practice, like from the Ho'oponopono prayer, it tends to draw us to a deeper level of headspace as well as heart space. My headspace shifted. My headspace shifted to embrace some new headlines. Maybe this was supposed to happen. Maybe this is for my good. Maybe I can apologize. And then I would go back to picking up the old headlines again, but with a slightly different twist. Science of Mind minister forgets everything she's been trained to do. Ernest Holmes is actually spinning in his grave. Live footage at 5 p.m. No, I just kept doing the prayer, and finally I was able to craft an apology, an email apology to the person that I offended, and I was able to send it with great love and great tenderness and great forgiveness for him and for myself. And it was a good apology. You know, I could feel as I was typing it, I kept wanting to justify why I had said what I said. Right? Anybody ever been there? Right? Yeah. And I acknowledged that I wanted to justify, but I said in the email, this is not about that. This is about me recognizing your viewpoint on this and how sorry I am to have offended that. And it was really good. I got a response right away. Everything's fine. Move on with life, right? No. Wrong. And that beautiful reading that Hugh did from Deepak Chopra's book, which is The Secrets of the Universe, We have a few of them in the bookstore. We're getting more next week. He talked about how our intestines, or intestines as Canadians say, our intestines have wisdom. That there are cells, there are neurons in the intestines that can think. They just don't think in the verbal language of the brain. And the same thing is true for the heart. The heart actually has cells that can think, but not in the verbal language of the brain that we're accustomed to. You know, many of you probably took Chris Kelkar's and Meenal Kelkar's class, where he talked a bit about heart math. He actually spoke about heart math up here one time. And if you want to know more about that, talk to him. He can explain it much better than I can. But my understanding of it is that the heart has something like 40,000 neurons that they respond in unique and ways unlike the brain to stimuli in our environment. And then it's a pump, so it sends these responses all over the body. The whole body is affected by the heart. And not only that, the heart can talk to the brain and the brain can talk to the heart. But I've read that the heart actually talks to the brain more than the brain talks to the heart. What I love about this is that, you know, it said in that reading that Hugh did, is that we're not so good at manipulating our bodies to respond in the way that we can manipulate our brains to respond. Like, when I finished that apology, I'm like, great, I'm done. Let's go watch television, right? My body wouldn't betray me. I got sick. I got a cold. I had a measles shot because I'm going overseas in a few weeks. And it wouldn't let up. And I wasn't feeling good, and I was feeling discouraged, completely discouraged about everything. being very dramatic about everything. My work at the church is finished. Sorry, I know people don't like it when I talk that way. Probably didn't even hear me because I said it so softly, right? Did anybody hear what I not hear what I said? I said, my work at the church is finished. That's what I said, but I didn't mean it. Just, you know, when you get in that place of feeling despair in your body and in your mind, and you're not even knowing that you're feeling it in your body, by the way, it's just running the story, things start looking really bad. And many of us don't even question that. And I was in a phase of allowing that script to run and not even questioning it until my body got my attention by having a cold that wouldn't quit and bringing up these feelings. So, that was my headline. My work is finished. And then, because life happens and I needed to go on with life and do what I need to do, as I decided I needed to get better, so I decided to, again, take it into meditation, take it into prayer, and really feel what I was feeling, really feel the sensations in my body, and then really feel the feelings that were coming up and the feelings that I was having that I had made a mistake. And that I had done forgiveness, but it wasn't done yet. I had done the work of forgiveness, but I wasn't complete yet. And what happened when I meditated on that was I got a really ancient headline that I think applies to a lot of us. And that is, I'm not sure if I have the right to exist exactly as I am. That this one mistake invalidates a lifetime of goodness. This one mistake seems to have the power to diminish my perception of who I am. I think many of us walk around with that existential guilt or angst or anxiety or shame that we don't have the right to exist as we are. I remember, I shared this recently, but Lonnie's here again, so I'm going to share it again. I remember hiking with Lonnie and telling her that, you know, I wake up and I'm not sure if I have the right to take up space on this stage and also the stage called Planet Earth. And Lonnie, bless her heart, she rolled her eyes so hard, it's a wonder she didn't go blind, you know. She said, of course you do, you're here. And that's true for all of us. If we are here, we have a right to be here in our bodies as ourselves. But see, the brain doesn't always know that. The neural grooves don't always know that. And sometimes we repeat that and it reflects in our bodies and we can get to that untruth through our bodies and then sit with that awareness and do something about it. Do something about it because we know it isn't really true. Dr. Ernest Holmes, who is the founder of this spiritual teaching and who, according to the Weekly World News, was evidently spinning in his grave with live footage at 5 p.m., Dr. Ernest Holmes said that we must turn entirely away from the condition. We turn entirely away from the untruth. Deepak Chopra says in this book, this Secrets of the Universe, is that there is a place of non-suffering within you. You have a place of non-suffering within you right now, no matter what is going on. You have a place of non-suffering within you. And he says that it is simple and open awareness. So a lot of the mystics, a lot of the spiritual greats say, yes, turn entirely away from the condition. And what that means is to recognize who you are. We sing that song, I Am Remembering Who I Am. And I made a point this morning, and hope to do so in the future, that it's part of recognizing that we are ourselves, we are our bodies, but we are also more than our bodies. We are the I Am Presence. Rupert Spira likens the I Am Presence to the space in a room. So just consider the space in this beautiful room, and how fortunate we are to have this space, as Dion pointed out. We have this space in the room, and the space can hold whatever we give it. If we painted the walls pink, the space would just accept that. Maybe some of us wouldn't. if we cry in this space, the space just accepts it. If we laugh in this space, the space just accepts it. And within each of us, we have a spaciousness that accepts everything, and that spaciousness is the emptiness, the divine emptiness that is the fullness of everything. We have that spaciousness within us that is aware yet unaffected by anything that happens. And so as we turn entirely away from the condition, we turn back to that spaciousness, to the I Am presence. And we remember that, as Deepak Chopra said, there is a place of non-suffering within us that is completely open, that is open awareness. We just do that through practice and spiritual community, through prayer, through affirmation, through all of that, and so much more. Mostly practice. Mostly recognizing it on a daily basis and just being willing to turn away. But the other thing, other great spiritual teachers, Rupert Spira included, suggests that we turn entirely away from the condition and recognize who we are. But these habits of thinking, these habits of limitation, and these habits of assumption have been so ingrained upon us that we can't just leave them alone. He suggests that instead of just pretending that they're not there, that we absorb and engage and involve ourselves in the divine process, and then we turn back to the frailties and the flaws of this world and embrace them as the divine. You know, one of the things that I talk about a lot here is embracing our flaws, embracing our oneness, but also embracing our flaws, because our flaws are part of our oneness. Our flaws are part of our perfection. Our frailty is part of our strength. I hope that makes sense. It doesn't really. It's a paradox, but it doesn't make sense to me. All of that is who we are, and it all has energy and power. So we, again, remember the exact nature of who we are, this I Am presence that is aware yet unaffected, and then we turn back and we welcome the things that we call our frailties. What that means, one way I know of doing this, is to allow yourself to feel what you feel. Allow yourself to feel what you feel, both in your mind, I guess, and in your heart. Feel it. And then see if you can separate the sensation from the story. A lot of what causes us to feel bad is the story that is attached to sensation. So when I was feeling badly about what I had said, I was feeling this sort of crushing sensation in my chest, and feeling this tightness, and feeling this clenching. And I recognized that the story was informing all of those bodily sensations. And we let go of the story, or we just allow the story to be over here, and we just feel the feeling, we just feel the sensations. And when we do that, we make peace with the feeling. And the story doesn't matter so much anymore. It's like the story doesn't have any power over us if we can make peace with the feeling that comes up in us. You get that? The story is trying to, for whatever reason, trying to derail us, trying to survive and trying to derail us away from our peace. But if we just separate the story, just put it in a different place, just rend the garment, put the story over here, feel the sensations, then we have a whole new experience that often leads to healing and insight and wonder. Rupert Spira suggests that we welcome everything in that manner. We first turn away from the condition and remember who we are, and then we turn back to the condition as the I Am presence and remember it and welcome it. He also says that we have to be on guard against fake welcoming. That sometimes the ego is so clever that it says, oh, I'm going to welcome this bad feeling so I can get rid of it. Right? No. That's not what we're going for. He suggests that we know that we've done it well, that we know that we're in alignment. When we have a feeling, we turn back to it, we can welcome it, and we can say to it, you can stay as long as you want because I love you. I have compassion for you. You are part of the mystery. So y'all going to do that from now on? Say yeah, okay, all right. All right. I'll tell you the results that happened for me when I did it. I did it for a while. It actually didn't take very long. I just did it for like a, I don't know, 20, 25 minutes on a Thursday afternoon, and just to practice, turning back and feeling that the thing that was most powerful for me was feeling the sensation in the story and then separating the two of them. And feeling the story over here, and then just feeling, oh wow, the sensation all by itself is not intolerable. And then it became tolerable, and then it became beautiful. One of the gifts of forgiveness and knowing that you're doing forgiveness well is that you are actually grateful for the experience where you had to forgive yourself or somebody else. And I have to tell you, I am so grateful for putting my foot in my mouth at the place where I got chastised in public. I am grateful for being chastised in public. I am grateful for the shame that I felt. I am grateful for the humiliation that I felt. I am grateful for the defensiveness that I felt. I am grateful for all of it because it all is opportunity to practice. It is all wonder and it is all love. And it all reminds me that we are the Christ consciousness. The Christ consciousness means that we are fully divine and that we are fully human. We turn away from the condition and then we turn back to it and we welcome it. I think that this is a truth in many spiritual teachings. Rupert Spira refers to the turning away as Vedanta, recognizing our oneness, and turning back to it, to the welcoming of what is, calls that Tantra, Vedanta and Tantra. I notice that whenever I talk about turning away, I go this way. What does this remind you of? Dervish, right? A dervish involving involution, turning counterclockwise, involving his or herself with the divine, while the sheikh stands in the middle, evolving, turning clockwise, turning back to what is. So, grateful for what happened, feeling delightful, feeling delighted to exist, feeling beautiful, feeling magnificent, feeling spiritual awe and wonder at everything, even the things that at one point we didn't like. This is all of the gift of reality. In terms of that question that caused our beloved sister Lonnie to roll her eyes and go blind, that question, do we have a right to exist as we are? You know, I thought about that a lot this morning as I was meditating. I thought, you know, I could probably never pay the debt of my existence. And yet, that's perfect in its own way, because it causes us to let go of the quid pro quo consciousness of the ego, and move into a state of grace, where we recognize that we are both fully human and fully divine, and that we have neurons in our intestines. How wonderful is that? I love you, I bless you, I believe in all of you. Let us pray. Thank you.